This weekend is the birthday of Wisconsin legend Robert M. La Follette Sr., better known as Fighting Bob. He was a man who touched a lot of bases in Wisconsin politics, serving as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, and governor of the state. And he ran for president of the United States as the nominee of the Progressive Party in 1924. As Wisconsin gears up for another gubernatorial election, we'll look back on the influential career of Fighting Bob La Follette. Our guest is Jonathan Kasparek. He's professor of history at the UW-Waukesha and author of Fighting Phil, a biography of Philip La Follette. Welcome to Central Time.
Thanks.
So how did Fighting Bob's experience growing up in Wisconsin as a student at UW-Madison influence his politics?
Well, he was the first governor born in the state, grew up in Dane County, and the first to attend the University of Wisconsin, where he was actually quite a bad student. he was a good student, I should say, just not in the classroom.
Right. Did he have trouble making it all the way through college, given his poor classroom experience?
Well, it was a very close thing. In those days, the faculty met and voted individually on each graduate, and he had a tie vote until President John Bascom decided that he should pass. So he became part of the class of 1879.
So squeaking through college, how did he then get into politics?
Well, he built on what he did in college. He wasn't a great student academically, but he was a very popular student and learned that he had a knack for organizing. He bought the student paper and began organizing a political campaign for student government. He became the winner of an interstate oratorical competition and became a campus hero. So he learned that he had the ability to motivate people to speak and speak well.
And then what was his first foray into electoral politics, trying to get into office?
His first elected office was district attorney of Dane County in 1880, after he had been a lawyer for just over a year. And he did it mostly because he needed the money at an $800 salary, I think, and that was what he wanted.
Now, over time, he became involved with the state's Republican Party, but he wasn't apparently wild about the direction the party was taking. How did he become an agitator?
He became an agitator early on. The story that he tells in 1880, he decides he's going to run for district attorney and has a confrontation with the postmaster of Madison, Elisha Keyes, who said, "I hear you're running for district attorney, and we have somebody else lined up already." La Follette decided that he wasn't going to let any one person stand in his way, so he started doing the rounds. He went to every farm in Dane County that he could and met all the voters and got the nomination over the boss.
And was this pretty much a one-party state at that point? If you got the Republican nomination, you were more or less a shoo-in?
It really was, and I think that's where the Republicans really ran a risk, because they started taking voters for granted. And La Follette learned that if he appealed directly to the voters on a one-to-one basis and went out and shook hands, he could convince them that he would be more interested and look out for their interests better than the party bosses that they'd been voting for.
So apart from working against the party, I don't think we could call it a machine quite, but what issues was he starting to take up around that time in that district attorney race and ones that followed soon after?
When he's running for district attorney, and then later when he serves in the House of Representatives, he's not really an insurgent yet. He's a pretty typical Republican. He is a law and order Republican. The big issue in the 1880 election was what they called the tramp menace, too many unemployed men from the Depression of 1873 roaming the countryside. When he's in the House of Representatives, he votes, as Republicans do, for a high tariff. You get a little glimmer of his independent streak. Some of the lumber interest and the railroad interest in Wisconsin saw the Menominee Reservation as a great source of timber, and he kind of stopped them from getting that land. But he's not really an insurgent yet. The big change comes in 1891.
What happened then?
1890 is an unusual year. It's the one of the few years that the Republicans lose. And the Democrats suddenly find themselves with the governorship, the legislature, and most of the congressional delegation, and La Follette finds himself unemployed. It turns out that the Republicans had been engaging in a kind of a nice graft. They had the control of the treasurer's office, and they kept the interest on all of the state's deposits and used it kind of as a party slush fund. When the Democrats took over in 1891, they filed a lawsuit to reclaim all of that money, and a lot of Republicans stood to lose a lot. And one of those Republicans is the former U.S. Senator Philita Sawyer, who summons young Bob La Follette to Milwaukee for a meeting, pulls out a wad of cash and says, here, you need to fix this. And La Follette assumed that he's being offered a bribe to influence the case, which is being held in a Dane County courtroom in a court presided over by his brother-in-law. So suddenly he realizes politics are corrupt and decides that he's going to be the crusader against corruption.
So at what point, that kicked off a long career on issues of corruption and the influence of money in politics, where did he get the nickname Fighting Bob?
Because he kept fighting. He goes to the Republican state conventions. He wants to run for governor, and the bosses keep pushing him down through one case, the bribery. In another case, they rig the convention against him. And he keeps going back every 2 years to fight them. And he's very strident. He won't compromise. He wants to be elected, and he wants to be a reformer.
How effective, when he finally made it into the governor's office, how effective was he there? Did he have to compromise a lot once he was in the governor's chair?
He didn't really compromise a whole lot. But back then, of course, governors were two-year terms, so he's up for re-election in 1902 right away. Didn't actually get a lot done his first term because he refused to compromise. So he goes over the politician's head and campaigns and tells people, if you want to get anything done, vote for candidates who will support my agenda. Hmm. And he's much more successful in his second term when he gets tax reform in place, what was called ad valorem taxation, where the railroads and other corporations would be taxed on the value of their property. He gets a primary election law passed where the voters will choose a candidate for the party rather than a convention. So he does get what he wants, and mostly because he refuses to compromise.
Then he goes on to the U.S. Senate, and I've seen lists that historians and some others have done of most influential, important senators in history, and he is often up there on that list. What was his legacy in the Senate?
His great legacy in the Senate really is to continue being the spokesperson for farmers, working men, people who really have been left out of the great prosperity of the Gilded Age. He's probably most famous for opposing U.S. entry into World War I, which almost ruined his career, but not quite.
And then looking ahead, you've written about fighting Phil. How did his family carry on his political agenda?
Well, Phil, of course, goes on to be elected governor in 1930 and has a whole host of reforms that he introduces as well, including the nation's first unemployment compensation law that goes on to become kind of a blueprint for the rest of the country. His son, Bob Jr., becomes senator in 1925 and serves until 1946 and is also very well regarded as one of the greatest U.S. senators.
And let's talk about his legacy in just the last couple of decades. I've certainly heard Democrats style themselves as the heir to Fighting Bob. I've seen a couple of Republicans paint themselves as mavericks, too. People who are willing to buck their own party. Do people still want to pick up the mantle of Fighting Bob in Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin voters seem to really like those kinds of politicians that are willing to be independent. And you're right, both Democrats and Republicans sort of claim that insurgency and that populism. Bill Proxmire was a great example of that throughout his career. We've seen it in others as well.
We'll leave it there for now. A lot more that we didn't get to. Thank you for spending time with us today.
I'm glad to do it.
That's Jonathan Kasperek. He's a historian at UW-Waukesha and author of Fighting Phil, a biography of Philip La Follette. We've been talking about the life, political career, and legacy of Fighting Bob La Follette. His birthday, the anniversary of his birthday, is this Saturday.